Accession number 19860, Reel 1.
Ken Phipps, Reel 1, where were you born, please?
Born in Smerwick, in the West Midlands.
Which year was this?
The 1927.
Did you grow up and have your schooling at Smerwick?
No, most of my life was spent in a place called Tipton. And I later married after the army and went to live in a place called Gornal.
And how old were you when you left school?
16.
So, was this a grammar school?
It was a junior technical college.
So, this would have been 43 when you left there?
It was 42. I must have been a little under 16 when I left.
Have you any memories of the Second World War?
Oh, vividly. My father was a policeman and very involved in ARP work, of course. And we were bombed in that part of the world. Not personally, but we had bombing near us.
Can you describe what you experienced of the bombing, please?
Well, to begin with, everyone went into the Anderson shelter, which we'd had in the garden. But after a while, as you probably heard, most of us got tired of sleeping in the Anderson shelter and slept in our beds and hoped for the best. And we, although the bombing, if the bombing was very severe, and the noise was extreme, then we would go downstairs. But we rarely went into the shelter again, I seem to recall.
Why didn't you want to use the Anderson shelters?
Well, it was cold and uncomfortable.
What was your address during the bombing?
Where we lived.
Yes.
It was Locarno Road, Tipton, is that what you mean?
Yes.
Locarno Road, Tipton.
And did Tipton get many bombs?
We had a few. But I don't think any of them dropped within a mile of us. So we weren't severely bombed.
Did you have many servicemen in the area?
Well, there were servicemen on leave. But of course, I don't recall any. It's an industrial area, heavy industrial area. It's not the sort of place you expect a camp to be near. The nearest camp would be in Wolverhampton, I think. The RAF had a camp.
Any Americans in the area?
I can't recall Americans.
Did you undergo any kind of privations during the Second World War?
Well, of course, I was 10 when it broke out, and I'll be about 16 when it finished. Really, I don't recall any great problem. I imagine my mother had problems in trying to feed us on the rationing system, but she did very successfully. So I don't recall great privations.
How did you come to be in the army yourself?
I did an awful lot of studying part-time. You must recall, and this was my studying took place from about 1940 until I would be about 21, about 1949, something like that. Now, apart from the 2 years, I did 2 years at a full-time technical college. The rest of the time, something like 6 years, was done 3 nights a week at night school. As a result of this, I get rather tired of study and that sort of life. Now, because I was studying, I wasn't called up. Most people of my generation were called up at 18. I wasn't, because I was in the middle of study, and in those days, if you were on a course, you were allowed to finish the course before you were called up. They never did call me up. So rather disappointedly, because I was rather tired of all the study and the slog of work, I volunteered for the army. So I volunteered as a regular soldier. I volunteered and signed for 5 years with the colours and 7 with the reserve.
Which year did you volunteer for the army?
1949.
What was the procedure?
One went along to a recruiting office and said, I want to join the regular army. And they said, what particular branch would you like to go in? And since my father was in the First World War and served with the King's Own, Duke of Cornwall's, the Duke of Cornwall's Light Infantry, DCLI. I asked for that. Although I never actually did serve with that regiment, because in those days one went into a pool, a light infantry pool, and were allocated to a regiment.
Where did you do the basic training?
A place called Borden in Hampshire.
What was the basic training like?
Well, I did, if I remember rightly, it was something like 6 weeks basic training, might have been eight, and then you were posted to your regiments. But I was delayed because I took a WASB, it's War Office Selection Board. I didn't get a commission, but because of the delay, I was taken onto the permanent staff as an instructor for a little while, until I'd finished my WASB, War Office Selection Board. And then I asked for active service, and they posted me to the King's Own Yorkshire Light Infantry, who were serving in Malaya at the time.
How did you get out of Malaya?
On a troop ship, you mean? Is that what you mean? Troop ship. HM, I think it was in Lancashire, I think.
What were conditions like in the troop ship?
Well, we were cargo, weren't we? So we were on... It wasn't that bad, but of course we were crammed in rather tightly in the hold. There were... I think they were called standees. They weren't hammocks. But they were folding beds. Or folding, there was a standee in the middle with, as I recall, six canvas stretches between the steel standees. So imagine a centre standee and three beds each side, which folded up in the middle. The beds were steel frame, as I recall, and rope, canvas roped in between the steel. It wasn't that bad, but it was hardly high-class comfort. And as one got to the tropics, one could sleep on deck anyway, which I often did. I did almost always. As it got warmer, the hole was hardly a sort of place to enjoy one's repose. So it was much better to sleep on deck. There you slept on the wooden deck, of course, but it was very, very pleasant in the tropical night to sleep out there with the sea breezes. The only problem was that you had to get up rather early because the Alaska seamen would come around with a hose to hose the decks down. So you had to get up early, but that was worth it.
Had you known much about what was happening in Malaya in 1950 when you went out?
Not a great deal. That's a great deal. One understood there was a communist led guerrilla movement. And I remember reading a book on the way out to Malaya called The Jungle is Neutral. It's a well-known book at the time, which described the situation during Japanese occupation, which led to this type of thing, because the guerrillas were originally formed by the British, or helped by the British, to fight the Japanese. And of course, when the war was over, these guerrillas felt that they should have more power. And they were communists, largely. And they were rather rather upsetting the system over there by, as you probably recall, ambushing people like the planters who were living in remote spots and making themselves a nuisance. They'd ambush the army if they had the chance, but that wasn't their main objective. Their main objective was to terrorise ordinary individuals, the soft targets, if you like.
Did you find reading The Jungle as Neutral of any use to you?
Yes, because it did describe the situation I was likely to find in the jungle. The whole point of this book was to describe how this man formed these guerrilla groups, and how the jungle played a role in this. But the point was that the jungle was neutral in that it was the same for both sides. It wasn't a great help to anyone, but it was exactly the same for both sides. That was the point of the story.
This is Spencer Chapman, of course.
That's the man, yeah.
What happened once you got to Malaya?
Well, we were, the first thing that happened when we got off the ship was that we were given a rifle and 50 rounds of ammunition. Then we went by train up to Penang was the basis, our base, and the train went as far as I can't remember the name now, it's a well-known spot, near Penang anyway, and we disembarked and were taken by ferry across to the Penang, Butterworth was the name of the station opposite the railway station opposite the ferry to Penang. And then, of course, we had more training, jungle training, before we actually were allowed into the jungle.
What did the jungle training involve?
It's a question of living in the jungle and learning to patrol in the jungle, learning to form, to make simple shelters in the jungle, learning to navigate in the jungle, and survive against all the insects and snakes and other things you would expect to find in the jungle. I, of course, hadn't done any jungle training, but I had done quite a lot of training because I'd stayed behind as an instructor, so I didn't have any problem with weapons. And the weapon training and that type of thing, where some of the people had only had a very basic training and needed more training before they were allowed to use weapons.
And when did you go into the jungle on operations yourself?
Well, you obviously were spit up after having had the training and allotted to various companies. In that type of warfare, the battalion split itself up into companies, and each company had an area. And from that base, patrols were sent out, probably of a fortnight duration. So you'd carry the patrols would almost always be of platoon strength to begin with. So the platoon would go out for a fortnight into a certain part of the jungle, carrying 3 days' rations. Also, of course, carrying 50 rounds of ammunition, 2 grenades, an entrenching tool, half a dozen Bren magazines, and quite a number of other bits and pieces, your own clothing, of course, perhaps a change of clothing. Yes, it would be a change of clothing. And 3 days' rations. You're fairly heavily loaded. So you would go out for a fortnight and form another camp. And from there you'd send out patrols of proper section strength. You'd be supplied, of course, by air. Obviously, you couldn't carry more than 3 days' ration. And this involved wireless communication with the RAF and putting out recognition panels, yellow and red and various coloured silk panels, so these chaps could see where you were. They were very, very good, the RAF, I don't ever remember them not finding us. Dropped by parachute material.
Which company and platoon were you in?
I was in A Company. I'm not quite... I can tell you exactly, if you like, what platoon. I've forgotten.
You've now discovered which platoon it was.
Number 1 platoon, A Company.
Why can you remember the company and not the platoon so easily? Did the company mean more to you than the platoon?
It's difficult to remember now why one does this sort of thing. I think one could easily move about it. It's unlikely to be posted from one company to another, but you could easily be posted from one platoon to another. Perhaps that's the reason.
What was it like living in the jungle and operating in the jungle?
Well, you probably know what the climate of Malaya is. It's extraordinarily humid. It rains, as I recall, most days, and then the sun comes out and dries the rain away. Of course, the atmosphere is like old-fashioned washing day used to be, steam and heat. The jungle, of course, although it might be neutral, is extremely difficult to get through at times. And you are extraordinarily vulnerable to ambush. So one is always concerned, A, about the conditions of the weather, and also the fact that at the next turning in the path, if there is a path, that you could be under ambush conditions. We never were, of course, but one is trying to be aware of this.
You personally were never ambushed?
No. I don't ever recall firing a gun in anger, although we got very close to these people. The main objective was not necessarily to kill the people, but to keep them on the move. Because if you keep them on the move, they couldn't easily feed themselves. The other idea, of course, as is well known, is we've actually moved, eventually, an awful lot of the people who were living on the edges of the jungle away. So these guerrilla chaps couldn't impose on them and get them to supply food. So by constantly patrolling, you would keep them on the move, and if they're on the move, they couldn't easily support themselves. And this policy, and of course the policy of moving their food supply, was successful in the long run.
How did you know that you came into close contact with them?
Well, we had, of course, trackers with us, Ebu trackers, who were very, very clever at following tracks. And they would pick up these tracks and tell us how far away they were. You know, whether it was a day or 2 days or a long time. And sometimes they were only just in front of us, according to there. And they were very skilled fellows. And we would follow these tracks. And there's lots of little occasions where I remember being in charge of an ambush party where a supposed camp was being flushed out from the far side, and if they came in our direction, we would have ambushed them. It was successful. They did flush them out, but they didn't come our way. This is always the problem in thick jungle. They had probably a better route than the one we thought they'd come out of. That type of thing went on continually. So we were very close to them. And of course, we did lose some people. I don't recall anyone in my own company being killed, but other people suffered losses, other companies. In fact, there's a photograph there of a dead gorilla. They did actually shoot one in another company and paraded his body around the town to prove that they were successful.
Were you nervous or apprehensive whilst you were in the jungle?
I don't remember being particularly apprehensive. Don't forget, you had this, as I said, you were always concerned of looking around the next corner. I mean, in a situation like this, when you were on patrol, you had a leading scout obviously the most dangerous position of all, because he would flush out any gorilla, and he would perhaps catch the first volley. But so the leading scout, although was a well sought after job, because it carried an awful lot of kudos. He was a private soldier, but carried a lot of kudos to be a leading scout. It was very dangerous. Well, I never was in that position, because if I was leading a patrol, I would have a leading scout in front anyway. So he would take the first volley if anything happened round that corner. And of course, it was extraordinarily uncomfortable. You've got to realise that you were never dry. If you weren't wet from the rain, you were wet from perspiration, because there was humidity, extraordinarily humid. We had a great number of leeches on us, of course. Leeches were always available in a situation like that. It's very rare if you went on a day's patrol and weren't covered in leech bites when you came to strip off. They didn't hurt you at all, and we were all young and fit, and we had plenty of blood. I don't know anybody was particularly hurt by it. It was just unpleasant. The worst things, perhaps, were mosquitoes, because the mosquitoes would come in the evening, and nothing we ever had. We had insect repellents and so on, but none of them seemed to work. So they would be extraordinarily annoying, particularly during the time you're trying to get to sleep. When we were in camp, of course, that is the when we were in our base company camp, we had mosquito nets. We couldn't possibly carry them with us in a situation like this. And of course, we didn't have tents. All we had were our ponchos, which we made a sort of a lean-to type protection. which was very inadequate. And frequently, if we were near a habitation and were washed out, as often happened at night with the rain, we would try and find accommodation beneath the Malay houses. The Malay houses are always on sticks, or the Malays themselves always had houses on structures, and beneath the houses they kept the animals. So we would very cheerfully dust down with the pigs and the hens or whatever they were to get out of the rain. If you were lucky enough to be near accommodation, which wasn't very often.
What was the attitude of the Malays towards?
Oh, they encouraged us. They were very, very friendly. Because they knew that we were trying to protect them. The Malays also formed their own home guard type thing. But of course, they weren't too effective against guerrilla bands, really. But they did have they were armed with shotguns and they did form a sort of home guard. So they were very pleased to see us because we were obviously professionals by their standard. Although, of course, 90% of us were in National Service.
What rank did you have when you were operating in the
Malaya? Corporal. Mm. I went out as a Lance Corporal to Malaya. I was made up to full corporal before I went out in the jungle operations.
So what was the role of a corporal on a patrol?
Well, it depended on what size patrol it would be. Normally, if you took a whole platoon out, a corporal would be in charge of a section, something like 10 men. But often we went out on section patrols. I would be in charge of a patrol then, and I had 10 men with me, and one machine gun, the rest were armed with rifles.
And when you were in charge, did you just go where you wanted?
Or? Oh, no. You were given instructions to which route to take. That wasn't easy because the jungle was not awfully well mapped, and even if they did map it, you can imagine the with that type of condition, the jungle was growing at such a terrific rate, it would soon destroy any knowledge you had of the map because it was quite dodgy finding one's way about. But one did, and one would get some help from the native. If he could find a native, I only knew a few words of Malay. But it's amazing what you can do with a few words of Malay and sign language, and they would be very helpful.
To tell you where you were?
They would tell you where you were and give some idea. You know, you have a map and you issue a few names to them, and they'd give you some indication of where this place was and so on. You can imagine, they were very helpful.
So what kind of instructions would you be given as a corporal in charge of a section patrol?
Well, you go up to a certain area and come back by a certain route. And you obviously had a map, and one would try and follow this map. And you could often, if you were lucky and the map was accurate and the jungle hadn't grown too much, you could follow your route and come back.
And would you be hoping to find some specific thing?
Well, of course, one was always on the lookout for some indications of activity that was guerrilla activity. And you often had these guides who were Ibus, who were very, very good at tracking. And would give you a lot of help if they saw anything that looked interesting.
Ibans?
Iban, is it? I've forgotten it. Forgotten the name now.
And what kind of signs of the enemy do you remember coming across?
Well, it would be broken twigs and that type of thing, as I recall. It's a long time ago, of course. But they were extraordinarily clever at knowing. You see, obviously, you can imagine a situation where there are well-worn tracks of the local people using various routes. Obviously, they would be of no use to us at all. But if they saw, if we would go off the beaten track, and take a direct line through a certain piece of jungle. This is part of the instructions we were given. Now here is where the Iban, or the Iban, well, I've forgotten the name, Ibans, would be looking for tracks. Because ordinary people wouldn't want to go in this particular direction. As I recall, anyway, something like that.
Did you ever discover or capture any enemy camps?
We certainly came across enemy camps. But the ones that we came across largely hadn't been used for some time. But occasionally we came across something that was very, very modern, you know, very new. And we were alerted and tried to to scan the area to see if we could find them. But I never came across them. Other people, other companies did.
Did you ever find any possessions which had belonged to the enemy?
I can't recall. I don't think it's the sort of thing. The sort of things we found were, of course, fires that were places where there had been a fire and things like that. That type of thing, and places where people had laid down. That's what I recall. I don't recall finding any other possessions.
Did you ever lay ambushes yourself?
Oh yes, I have. Yes. Nobody ever came through it. But I've laid ambushes with a section ambush myself.
How long would you have to wait in those for?
Well, sometimes there would be a night ambush where you would be up for most of the night, and sometimes there would be in the case that I recall where we flushed the camp out. It was only for a few hours in the daytime.
And where was your base?
Where was?
Your base from which you operated?
Well, again, I can give you names if I look at my notes, because we moved from various places. I have notes here which says we were at a place called Serdang in October 1950. Another place I have mentioned, which was after Serdang, is a place called Kulim. Another place in January and February 1951 were at a place called Kula Narang. We also seem to have been operating from a place called Changlun. Generally, we were operating on the Siam border. That was the general area.
What was your attitude towards going out into the jungle? Did you look forward to it or dread it or what?
I can't say we were absolutely overjoyed, but of course, it was always, there's always a chance of adventure. I mean, it was an adventurous thing to be doing. I recall that when I first joined the King's Own Yorkshire Light Infantry on their base at Penang, they offered me a job in the quartermaster stores. I had a dickens of a job to get out of that position, because I wanted to see some action. There's little point in joining the regular army like I did and finish up at a desk. So I'm not trying to sound like a hero, but a young man at 21 with the possibility of seeing a little action, it does have attractions.
What effect, though, did casualties have in the battalion on morale?
I don't think it was a too great concern at all. And don't forget, we only suffered, I think, in the whole of the operation of about 3 years. 3 years operating, I can tell you exactly how many people died. I think about 30, something like that, 30 or 40. So it wasn't an enormous casualty list. We didn't have lists of men like you would have in intensive fighting that went on in the First and Second World War. Nothing like that.
But you seem to have been in Malaya about a year, from June 50 to August 51.
That's right.
Can you tell me about how you came to leave?
Oh, well, the battalion came home.
What had been your attitude towards the enemy whilst you were in Malaya? Do you feel any hatred or what, or respect for them?
We felt no respect for them because they were very unkind to people, to say the least. They bullied and